This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit GEICO.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Post office controversy. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, August 17. Thanks for joining us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
As the Postal Service warns of potential delays with mail-in ballots, the new Postmaster General is being called to testify before Congress.
A violent weekend. A man barricaded himself in a home after opening fire on three cops in Texas. Four people were killed in separate shootings in Cincinnati.
The four-day Democratic National Convention kicks off this week. Among tonight's speakers, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders.
And on the business front, the fast-changing landscape for America's convenience stores.
So much has changed. Think about it. Commuting is basically a rare art form these days. So you don't have office workers going down to the convenience store in the middle of the day to get a snack, to get some coffee. You don't have commuters filling up their cars with gas, maybe stopping in, picking up a candy bar or some windshield wiper fluid. They are feeling the pinch of COVID-19.
Zlati Meyer at Fast Company examines changes at Circle K, 7-Eleven, and Wawa. The U.S. Postal Service finds itself at the center of political controversy. Democrats have called on new Postmaster General Louis DeJoy to testify at a hearing a week from today. Meanwhile, Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the House is reconvening this week for a rare August vote on legislation stopping the Postal Service from implementing operational changes. The moves come as the Postal Service has warned it can't promise it will deliver all ballots in time to be counted if they're mailed close to Election Day. Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer.
It always used to be a credo. If the mail was at the distribution center that day, it would go out that night. They're saying, let it sit there for a few days. That's not efficiency.
Separately, the White House has balked at Democrats' postal funding requests, and President Trump has spoken out against widespread mail-in voting. Meanwhile, postal union representatives and some customers have complained about significant delays in recent weeks, which come after Mr. DeJoy started implementing cost-saving measures that had been recommended earlier by the agency's watchdog. Three Texas police officers have been shot after responding to a call north of Austin. Cedar Park police say a man in his 20s who has mental health issues has now barricaded himself inside a home with hostages. The interim police chief, Mark Harmon, says the wounded cops are doing well.
We do have a history at this residence. I'm not sure exactly what it all is for, but yes, our department has been here before.
Separate shootings in Cincinnati on Saturday night left four people dead and 18 injured. And there were other types of violence over the weekend. Demonstrations in downtown Chicago ended in a violent clash between police and protesters Saturday, leaving 17 officers injured. Pepper spray was deployed, 24 people arrested. In Portland, Oregon, a protest Saturday night saw demonstrators hurling mortars and rocks at police and cars. Two cops were injured there. Meanwhile, at least five people were wounded yesterday in a shooting at a flea market in San Antonio, Texas, following a dispute. The coronavirus pandemic will loom large over this week's Democratic convention and will be the key part of presumptive Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden's messaging. Mr. Biden's path to the White House is tied to the pandemic and that he accuses President Trump of mishandling it. And this week's convention, held with no crowds, given the health risks of the pandemic, Mr. Biden and other speakers will use the COVID-19 crisis to highlight Mr. Trump's failure, as they see it, to seek and convince voters to turn him out of office. In terms of the schedule, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who was Mr. Biden's rival for the nomination, will be featured tonight.
We have a president who is trying to undermine American democracy, a president who has turned his back on the working families of this country, a president who has done a horrible job in terms of the pandemic.
Former President Bill Clinton will speak tomorrow. On Wednesday, Mr. Biden's running mate, Kamala Harris, gets the spotlight. It's 10 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. According to a Pew Research Center study published in May, Gen Z is the country's most pro-government, anti-Trump generation, and 24 million of them are eligible to vote in November. But Gen Z has not always found the Democratic Party to be a reliable ally. Gabby Birenbaum, writer at The Hill, says while Gen Z voters are often progressive, youth activists and organizers are not yet sold on a party many feel does not listen to them and is unsure of how to communicate with them. Gabby, what are you hearing?
I think essentially Gen Z voters feel for the most part taken for granted by the Democratic Party. I think among the youth activists, youth organizers, and researchers that I talk to, they feel like the Democratic Party sort of only reaches out to them right before an election, isn't really interested in what they have to say, and is just kind of counting on their votes without having earned them. And so a lot of them feel that they're less likely to then identify as a Democrat as a result, or even if they'll support Joe Biden now, less likely to form that kind of long-term party identification that, you know, that Democrats should be gaining from Gen Z because they are so progressive in their positions.
Wow.
They should align with Democratic Party.
All right. So name the list of things kind of that they've been through and that they also feel they're not being heard on.
Yeah, absolutely. So Gen Z, I think, has grown up, you know, it's defined as pretty much anybody younger than 24. And they've been through a really specific and unique economic and political context. You know, they're in their now second major recession. It's 20 years pretty much of inaction on climate change, mass shootings. They've seen the cost of college rise, student loan debt balloon. And they've basically, Gen Z, you know, they've seen what millennials have gone through, essentially the same thing, and they're still dealing with injustice. They're still dealing with climate change. They're still dealing with student loan debt. And Gen Z is really just terrified that that's going to happen to them, and they want to work really hard to make sure the Democratic Party hears them and understands that they don't want to end up like millennials.
So how will they feel unheard? How do they plan to get heard, I guess?
Yeah, so Gen Z, something interesting I found out from talking to Jason Dorsey, who's a researcher with the Center for Generational Kinetics. Basically, Gen Z, because they're such digital natives, they're used to being heard in their daily interactions. You know, if they have a professor, they can go online, they can rate them. Mm. They can go post reviews for restaurants and brands. They're used to sort of being solicited by brands, engaging in active dialogue with them. So then when it comes to political parties, they don't feel that they're being heard in that same sense. You know, Gen Z overwhelmingly supports progressive policies. There's a lot of support for the Green New Deal, for Medicare for All, for canceling student loan debt, and they don't see the Democratic Party putting those into their policy platform, and they don't feel like the Democratic Party is engaging them, meeting them where they are online in these digital spaces. They're not doing it in what they feel is an authentic way, and so in order to be heard, they're taking to a lot of non-electoral routes. You know, they're protesting, they're in the streets, they're leading these online activism campaigns with hashtags, and they're sort of going about it in a non-electoral, non-official party way.
I'm just curious, based on what you said, if they feel that they're not being heard, why would they then think that government is the answer if they want government action on these items?
Yeah, it's a bit of an interesting dichotomy there. Something like nearly 80%, I don't have the statistic right in front of me, but it's, I think, something in the 70s% of Gen Z believes in an activist government. They believe that the government should be a force for good in people's lives and should be doing those things. And I think fundamentally they think the Democratic Party could do that because there are Democrats or independents like Bernie Sanders who caucus with the Democrats who they support. They supported Bernie Sanders overwhelmingly in the presidential primary. They like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a lot. So there are Democrats that they like and that they feel can use government for that positive change. They want government action to help them with things like climate change, with things like student loan debt, but they're just not seeing it right now from Democrats.
We're speaking with Gabby Birnbaum, writer at The Hill. Her piece is called Democrats Struggle to Harness Enthusiasm of Gen Z Voters, generally folks who are under the age of 24. So is there a chance then that they sit things out come November 3rd, 2020?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. Turnout for young voters is historically in any generation fairly low. You know, it's a fairly complicated process to vote, especially now with vote by mail, with absentee voting, with everything going on around that. It's going to be, you have to really convince young voters to vote. And so turnout in 2018 we saw was pretty much a record high in decades for voters under 30. They voted at around 28% in a midterm election, which is still pretty low. But that's expected to be a lot higher for a presidential year. A lot of experts in that field are predicting record highs. I think a lot of Gen Zers feel that the stakes are just too high to sit it out. But, you know, thinking long term, if they don't see Joe Biden or Kamala Harris sort of moving to the left on the issues they care about, then turnout for future elections could be depressed. One thing that Gen Z really, really cares about is authenticity. So they really like a candidate who's unscripted, who sort of speaks off the cuff, who they feel is directly speaking to them and engaging them. And something I found is that you don't need to be a younger candidate like an AOC to attract their attention. Someone like Ed Markey, who's in his 70s, who's running for Senate re-election in Massachusetts, you know, maybe Ed Markey himself might not know internet slang or how to talk to Gen Z, but he clearly has hired people who do. His campaign sort of makes memes, engages with them on Twitter, partners with them to do things like phone banking. So I think I found if you have a candidate who's progressive and authentic and they actually hire young people, then Gen Zers are going to sort of run with that, and they can almost run a proxy campaign for you online, being in those digital spaces that their peers are.
Nice, Gabby. Gabby Birnbaum, writer at The Hill. 20 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she's calling the House back into session over the crisis at the U.S. Postal Service, setting up a political showdown amid growing concerns that the Trump White House is trying to undermine the agency ahead of the election. President Trump's new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, has sparked nationwide outcry over delays, new prices, and cutbacks. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says DeJoy also should appear before the Senate.
He shouldn't be allowed to be the Postmaster General if, after all this destruction, he can't answer to the American people what he is doing.
Number two.
After reports surfaced in the past week of postal workers removing those iconic blue mail collection boxes from street corners in multiple states, the Postal Service says it will halt further removals for 90 days, citing recent customer concerns. Local news outlets in places from Montana to Oregon to New York have reported on mailboxes being hauled away in flatbed trucks in recent days.
Number three.
The U.S. has surpassed 170,000 coronavirus deaths and at least 5.4 million confirmed cases, the highest in the world and likely an undercount, as the country still has not ramped up testing to the recommended levels. Cases are falling in most states except for Hawaii, South Dakota, and Illinois. Three police officers in Texas were shot yesterday after responding to a call in a residential area, and the suspect has barricaded himself inside a home with hostages. Cedar Park Interim Police Chief Mike Harmon.
The subject is in his mid-20s. From what we can tell right now, talking with him and other family members, that there are some mental health issues.
The suspect barricaded himself in the house with three other family members, his mother, a juvenile, and a third person after the officers were shot. First, it was toilet paper, then hand sanitizer, puzzles, yeast, and coins. Now, the latest item to get hit by pandemic shortages is pepperoni. Small pizza shops across the nation are reporting higher prices for pepperoni, with some paying more than $4 a pound compared to $3 last year. So far, small pizza restaurants say they aren't passing the higher costs along to customers. And larger chains, including Domino's, Pizza Hut, Little Caesars, and Papa John's, haven't experienced shortages or price increases since they buy ingredients with long-term contracts.
Jeez. The list continues to grow. What's
That's
with that
a weird
pepperoni?
One.
That
I
is
don't
a,
know.
That is a weird one. You're right. Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for being with us. Time for a business update, and it's brought to you by Grainger. For all the ones who get it done, there's Grainger, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, plus 24/7 customer support and product specialists always ready to answer any question. Call or visit Grainger.com. Changes are happening quickly in the convenience store space. For example, Circle K is opening what's believed to be the world's first convenience store retrofitted with AI technology for autonomous checkout. More on the trend from Zlati Meyer, staff writer at Fast Company. Zlati, explain the changes.
So much has changed. Think about it. Commuting is basically a rare art form at these days. So you don't have office workers going down to the convenience store in the middle of the day to get a snack, to get some coffee. You don't have commuters filling up their cars with gas, maybe stopping in, picking up a candy bar or some windshield wiper fluid. They are feeling the pinch of COVID-19.
Okay. So in response to that, some of them are doing what?
We're seeing four of the big brands, or rather three of the big brands, and one sort of venturing into this as new territory, really pivoting. The most recent news was Circle K, and they announced that they're going to create what they're calling the world's first convenience store retrofitted with AI technology. And this will allow for autonomous checkout. Now, autonomous checkout is obviously very different than self-checkout. Autonomous checkout, at least in their case, has the store outfitted with about 80 to 100 cameras that record what items you take off the shelf. So it looks at things like the color and size of the packaging or the individual pieces of fruit. They calculate what it is that you've picked up, and then they run a tab, and on your way out, it just bills you automatically. Obviously, you have to download the app in advance. So this, of course, is very much in step with this whole idea of contactless retail, which has become very, very popular during COVID-19 when nobody wants to be near store associates, nobody wants to be in the checkout space. So that's one big thing. Another big thing that happened last week, of course, was that Circle, 7-Eleven bought Speedway for $21 billion. Obviously, a deal of that size has been in the works for a long time, but it has a lot of significance now as 7-Eleven, one of the premier convenience store chains in this country, faces COVID-19. Two other quick things, Wawa, which is a big regional chain in the greater Philadelphia area, they announced their first drive-through convenience store, and that's going to be built in suburban Philadelphia in a few months. And then finally, DoorDash, which is known, of course, for delivering food, is now segueing into the convenience store space, and they've partnered with chains like 7-Eleven, Casey's General Store, Circle K, and Wawa.
Is Circle K going to use the AI technology in all of its stores?
They're starting with one. They're doing a test in Tempe, Arizona, and I guess if it's successful, they will roll it out. But right now, they're just committing to that one.
We're speaking with Zlati Meyer, staff writer at Fast Company. She's written a piece that's entitled How Convenience Store Chains Such as Circle K and 7-Eleven Are Morphing in the COVID-19 Era. So with Wawa's, is it going to be the same thing with that drive-thru? You download the app, indicate what you want, pay, and then they just hand it to you as you pull up to the window, I guess?
It's going to be more of a traditional drive-through. It'll be more of a traditional drive-through, but this will be a standalone drive-through, which obviously is very innovative. We know some of the drugstore chains that sort of these days double as convenience stores, like, for example, CVS, have drive-throughs for their pharmacy department, but this will really be a convenience store drive-through. So you need a pint of Haagen-Dazs, you're having some sort of ice cream emergency, they got you covered.
It's Zlati Meyer, staff writer at Fast Company. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. The T-shirt is a menswear staple. Unfortunately, the basic tee we love has its issues, right? Shrinkage, bacon neck, fading, and stretching, to name a few. But the modern take on the classic T-shirt from Cuts Clothing has completely changed the game. With their amazingly soft, custom-engineered Pika Pro fabric, Cuts T-shirts have an athletic, tailored-looking fit that's comfortable anywhere, from a day in the office to a night on the town, and everything in between. I have to say, I love my Cuts T-shirts. I've worn them casually with shorts and sandals, but also under my suit jacket in more professional settings. They're one of the most comfortable, durable, and fashionably flexible shirts I've ever owned. Plus, they're pre-shrunk, wrinkle-free, and hold their shape over time, no matter what style you prefer. That's why Cuts is the only shirt worth wearing. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/Gordon. That's cutsclothing.com/Gordon for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. Again, cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
Bringing the world to your door every morning. This is America's First News, This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday, August 17. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. House to reconvene this week to vote on postal service changes. The four-day Democratic National Convention begins today. President Trump counters that with visits to Minnesota and Wisconsin. Tens of thousands in the Midwest remain without electricity following the derecho storm last week. Los Angeles School District launching a COVID-19 testing and tracing program today. The NBA playoffs begin inside the Walt Disney bubble with a 1:30 tip-off between Utah and Denver. And the Oklahoma boy who's gone viral for his adoption plea. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Just days before some school districts in Florida are set to begin the new year, confusion reigns. Part of the chaotic environment stems from schools now being required to provide in-person instruction 5 days a week or risk losing funding. More from Arian Campo Flores, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. He joins us from his post in South Florida. Arian, set this up.
Really, at the crux of what's happening is an executive order that was handed down in July by the state education commissioner that required all school districts across the state, with the exception of the three South Florida ones that have always been kind of their own case because this is, you know, the hot spot. But all other districts to offer in-person instruction 5 days a week. That had to be an option for parents. And there's been a lot of pushback because, you know, the numbers, even though they've been declining in recent weeks in Florida, are still very high, the case numbers. The positivity rates are very high, in most cases above where the World Health Organization's recommends that they should be to be able to reopen safely. And so you have districts in some cases that are pushing back on that and saying, you know, we want a waiver from this order, or we want some sort of, you know, exception made because we don't feel like we can do this safely. And we feel like we're being coerced into opening up when we can't protect sufficiently our teachers and our children. And then on top of that, you have litigation that has been prompted by this. So you have the statewide teachers union that has sued to challenge that executive order, saying that it's unconstitutional to force reopenings when it's not safe conditions. And then there are also a few county teachers associations that have filed litigation as well, seeking to block these forced classroom openings.
So it's up to the local districts, but, right? That's kind of what it sounds like here. But
yeah.
They want and need the local, the state funding.
Right. So, you know, one of the things that's been really confusing for the districts and the school boards to sort out is the very language of that executive order and some confusing messaging that's coming from the state, from the governor and from the education commissioner. So the way the executive order is written, there is a provision of it that suggests that if your local health department tells you that it is not safe to reopen the school district and to reopen schools in your area, that order would give you an out. However, when the school boards have gone to the local health officials to say, you know, is it safe? Do you recommend that we reopen? In some cases, those local health officials who in Florida are actually part of the state health department have responded that they cannot give that advice. They are not empowered to be able to recommend that. And so, you know, it appears that there is this, you know, this out or this alternative for school districts to seek an exception, yet they're not, in practicality, they don't seem to be able to actually exercise it.
Boy.
And so they feel like they are just hamstrung.
We're speaking with Ariane Campo Flores, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "Are Florida Schools Reopening During Coronavirus? Parents Can Tell as State and Districts Fight." Your reference too, I was just curious, this town in northern Florida called Live Oak. You said the kids have returned to class, and like on maybe the first day or so, they were greeted by teachers without masks?
So on Monday, that was the first day of class for a handful of districts across the state, including Suwanee County, which is in the northern part of Florida, sort of not too far from Tallahassee. Suwanee County is an example of a district where there seems to be a lot, you know, less controversy about reopening, a lot more folks on board with reopening. So when kids returned to school, there was not much mask wearing.
Thanks, Ariane. Ariane Campo Flores, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
When you talk to a Dell Technologies advisor, they're focused on you. They are real people ready to give real advice on everything from laptops to the cloud. And they offer tailored solutions powered by the Intel vPro platform to keep your small business ready for what's next. Dell advisors listen so you know that your small business needs have been met. Call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. It is time now for the Mic Drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know that some people will do almost anything for fame on TikTok, but we may have found a line that most people wouldn't cross. According to NJ.com, a young woman named Donna Pesapar was on a family trip to see the Statue of Liberty last week when she decided to take a quick dip in the Hudson River in front of the famous landmark in the hopes of generating some social media buzz. And she did just that, with the 10-second clip now having been viewed close to 3 million times. What she also generated were a lot of people saying ew about her diving headfirst into a body of water infamous for raw sewage, dead bodies, and centuries of pollution. Many joked that she might come out of the water transformed into the Toxic Avenger or a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. But Pesapar says the splash of fame was all worth it, however grimy and gross, saying that she lives by the YOLO mentality.
Man, I happened to see this yesterday. I think it was on Instagram.
Yeah.
And the caption was "Patient Zero."
Yeah, right. This reminds me of an old George Carlin routine when he talks about when he was growing up in New York in the 1950s. You know, they swam in the Hudson River. They swam in raw sewage, basically.
Right.
Every single day. Look, every day we jumped in the water, we swam in raw sewage, and we were fine. And, you know, we never got sick. We never got the sniffles. You know, everything was great.
I mean, the New York Department of Environmental Conservation recommends that you do not put your head underwater in the Hudson River.
Right.
Now, she was technically, I think, in Upper Hudson Bay
around
the Statue of Liberty, but close enough.
Certainly in the neighborhood.
But she knows water. Like, she's, you know, she's from Long Island,
yes.
So she would be familiar with this.
Right.
She's a lifeguard, I think, you know, in a part-time. So
she
has all this familiarity with water and still made that decision.
Yeah, I don't think she knew quite what she was getting into.
Oh,
I guess she found out later. Like, she didn't realize quite how dirty and grimy it was. And she even said that she got some in her mouth. And it was pretty disgusting. So, you know, she might need a shot or two within the next week. Who knows?
Goodness. Well, she's bold, if nothing else.
Yes, she most definitely is. And good news for the St. Louis Cardinals. They made it back to play baseball games this weekend for the first time since a COVID-19 outbreak in July. The bad news? One of their pitchers made the wrong kind of history. Relief pitcher Roel Ramirez made his major league debut in the fifth inning of yesterday's Cards-White Sox game with Chicago up 1-0. And before you could blink, that lead was 7-0 thanks to four consecutive White Sox homers, all given up by Ramirez. It was the first time ever a pitcher has allowed four home runs consecutively in their major league debut.
Jeez.
The good news for Ramirez, with an ERA now approaching triple digits, his season has nowhere to go but up.
Is that right?
Yeah, so it was 2/3 of an inning and then 6 earned runs for him. So, I that was too much math for me. It's up there near 100. That's for sure.
My goodness.
So, even if he comes in and gives up only one run in an inning or two runs in an inning, his ERA still goes down for the season.
Jeez. So that's either the greatest scouting report ever against a pitcher or absolute zero movement on the fastball or hanging curveballs.
Yeah. Perhaps some nerves because, again, it's your first game ever. Sure.
Man, that's unbelievable. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. We've heard for years that it's important to have a diversified portfolio, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that kind of thing. But if you've ever looked at a breakdown of the most successful portfolios, you'll typically see real estate. So why isn't it one of the first asset classes you consider when you're looking to diversify? Well, simple. It hasn't been available to investors like you and me until now, thanks to Fundrise. Whether you're new to real estate investing or a veteran, Fundrise can help. Fundrise is an investing platform that makes investing in high-quality, high-potential real estate as easy as investing in your favorite stock or mutual fund. Fundrise manages more than $1 billion in assets for more than 130,000 investors with a team of real estate professionals that carefully vets real estate projects. Start building your better portfolio today. Get started at fundrise.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. That's fundrise.com/Gordon. to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. Fundrise.com/Gordon.
Behind the headlines, above the noise, you're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for joining us. There are more ways than ever to connect to America's First News. You can download the This Morning with Gordon Deal app from the Apple or Google app stores. You can also tell Alexa, Google, or Siri to play This Morning with Gordon Deal. Going to college immediately after high school has been a rite of passage for millions of students. Now, more college-bound students are considering a gap year amid rising coronavirus cases and concerns about the value of college instruction that may be partly or all online. But USA Today says there could be a downside to delaying college by a year. According to a study from economists at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, there's the potential loss of $90,000 in lifetime earnings. That might seem counterintuitive, given that the pandemic has pushed the jobless rate higher, prompting questions from families about whether it's the best time to make a pricey investment in a college degree. New York Fed economists say that's missing the point. The pandemic has made a college degree more valuable, not less, partly because the prospects for people with only a high school diploma are far weaker in the pandemic than for those with a bachelor's degree. One study, by the way, finds that 40% of incoming freshmen are likely or highly likely to not attend any four-year college this fall. Last week, Harvard reported that more than 20% of its first-year students are deferring enrollment. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
For the second time in 4 years, the Democratic presidential primary pitted the expanding progressive movement against an eventually victorious establishment. But as the party gathers virtually this week to nominate Joe Biden for the presidency, the possibility of President Trump's reelection has become Democrats' unifying and energizing force. Candidate Kamala Harris told Griot.com her party is prepared for attacks.
Let's just be very candid and straightforward. They're going to engage in lies. They're going to engage in deception. They're going to engage in an attempt to distract from the real issues that are impacting the American people.
Number two.
Democrats are stepping up pressure against a cost-cutting campaign by President Trump's appointed Postal Service chief that they fear will hold up mail-in ballots, with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi calling lawmakers back and several states considering legal action. Top Democrats in Congress called on Postmaster General Louis DeJoy to testify at a hearing on a wave of cuts that has slowed mail delivery across the country. White House trade advisor Peter Navarro on Fox.
They want to come back so they can rename the post office the United States Ballot Harvesting Service.
President Trump has repeatedly and without evidence said that a surge in mail-in voting would lead to fraud.
Number three.
A saliva-based COVID-19 test developed by researchers at Yale in partnership and funding from the NBA and its Players Association has been approved for emergency use by the FDA. Researchers have been looking for a test that is less invasive than the nasal swabbing method and less expensive, which can lead to widespread testing and make up for shortages of other testing methods. A rare summer thunderstorm brought lightning that sparked several small blazes in Northern California yesterday and stoked a huge wildfire that has forced hundreds of people from their homes north of Los Angeles. More than 4,500 buildings remain threatened by the fire, burning toward thick, dry brush in the Angeles National Forest. The Lake Fire is just 12% contained and has burned nearly 28 square miles of brush and trees. Well, summer is slipping away, and with the pandemic, many people have skipped their vacations this year. But if you can get away for just a few days, Hotwire has put together a list of the best local getaways. Topping the itty bitty city list is Charleston, followed by Newport Beach, Santa Barbara, South Bend, and Sarasota. Number one among small towns, Orlando, followed by Scottsdale, Fort Lauderdale, Reno, and Salt Lake City.
Are those considered small towns?
Well, jeez, compared to the,
compared to big cities.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Thanks for being with us. 9-year-old boy from Oklahoma named Jordan, who's living in a group home, made a heartbreaking plea for a family to adopt him during a local news interview last week and received thousands of responses within just 12 hours as a result. In a story by KFOR Television, the young boy who said he wants to be a police officer when he grows up begged for a permanent home to call his own.
Well, the reason why it's important is because so I could have some people to talk to anytime I need to.
Within hours of his statement, families from New Jersey, Florida, Illinois, and Kentucky reportedly reached out to the news station seeking to help provide him with a permanent home. Jordan has been in the care of the Oklahoma Department of Human Services for 6 years. He'd previously been there alongside his younger brother, Brayson, but he was later adopted, leaving Jordan on his own. His permanency planner told KFOR that over 5,000 submissions to adopt Jordan have been sent so far. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Did you know that right now GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.